DJ Blather turned 65 this year, and they're taking away all my toys. Looks like 10 points down the dial. So my mother says newspaper clippings of old friends who are no longer boys, like BET, Berkeley's evil terrorist, whose leather chair awaits at the bank, and Amy and the Amy bots at the 9/11 getaway wheel worth 20 battalions of tanks.
Still finds it a nice thing to do to lie about nude in the sand, drawing pictures of mountains that look like bumps and thrashing the air with his hands. But wait, whole Lather's productive, you know. He produces the finest of sound, putting drumsticks on the side of his nose, snorting.
Randy Credico just tweeted out several hours back something very, very important. This is a very serious matter. The current president, Lenin Moreno, is not committed to self-determination of Ecuador as the great Rafael Correa. Please send and send and send. And he included me with other brilliant journalists and just really wonderful people within the tweet. Then he wrote, "This is a genuine, serious situation. Trust me, I know. Please mobilize." He linked to an article, "Ecuador's Korea Afraid for Julian Assange's Safety." So before I get started reading the article, first off, Randy Credico is a good friend of Julian Assange. Randy Credico has visited Assange numerous times, and Randy wouldn't tweet out hyperbole. So I'm taking it seriously, and I'm doing this segment, and I'm going to read you this article, "Ecuador's Correa Afraid for Julian Assange's Safety. It will only take pressure from the United States to withdraw protection for Assange," said Correa. Former Ecuadorian President Rafael Correa has warned that WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange's days are numbered at the Ecuadorian embassy in London. Correa, who gave Assange asylum back in 2012, said he's afraid for Julian Assange's safety due to the new government's actions with regards to his case. He said that he believes President Lenin Moreno is likely to take away the support previously afforded to the anti-secrecy activist. "It will only take pressure from the United States to withdraw protection for Assange, and surely it's already being done. And maybe they await the results of the February 4th referendum to make a decision," said Correa. When asked, does he have evidence to support his claim, Correa said it's clear that Moreno, quote, has no convictions. It's clear that he has yielded to the unusual power brokers and will soon, quote, soon yield regarding the question of Assange.
And we'll get back to that, but on the previous subject here,
it's progressive media as well. Democracy Now!, Amy Goodman, people like Noam Chomsky will not deal with these political assassinations. Neither will they deal, of course, with 9/11 to the extent that They should deal with them. They just simply don't. And why is that? Well, funding comes from the Ford Foundation, which has been a CIA channel for a very long time, or Bill Moyer's entity. And there's a line that they don't cross, and they won't cross. I've come to believe these are not bad people, because a lot of the stuff they put out there is stuff the American people should know about, and it's good, and it's useful. And Chomsky's analyses are very helpful and enlightening in certain areas of the world. But when it comes to certain lines, certain areas, they will not go there, and you can't expect them to. I've learned painfully that they They simply will not. So after that trial was not covered, I continued. We did a second book, Act of State, which went through the evidence of the trial. And that was in 2003. 2016, the final book was published. I had been at this then, on this slippery slope, coming to the end of the slippery slope that started in 1978. I had come to the end of it in June of 2016 when The Plot to Kill King was published. And what it revealed is staggering. It was staggering to me. I took so much evidence under oath and filmed the depositions and insisted that the text of the depositions, the critical evidence, be put in the book itself, in the appendices. So no one could say, as they would, he took this out of context, or that statement was misinterpreted. The actual evidence is there. And what does it reveal? Well, it reveals something that the world does not know, and most of the world will not know because they don't even know that this book is available. But what it reveals is that J. Edgar Hoover used his number two, Clyde Tolson, to come into Memphis on a regular basis and liaise with the Dixie Mafia and organize the on-the-ground killing of Martin King. It shows that Tolson carried $25,000 in, and that money was carried to the prison where James Earl Ray was. James had been profiled, he never knew this, and the money was given to the warden, Swenson, and James was allowed to escape. And then he became part of their network. He was under a handler whom he knew as Raul, and who I later came to learn was named Raul Coelho, and lived, he was an ex-Portuguese intelligence operator who lived in Yonkers, New York. And he would leave his set-up job and do what he had to do. And we had eyewitness evidence of all of this, including carrying the money to the prison because the son of the Dixie Mafia leader, Russell Adkins, rode to the prison with his father with the money. So they gave it to the warden. So that aspect of the case was very clear. Then Martin was killed on April 4, 1968, but not by the gunshot wound that was fired from the bushes. He was hit by a bullet fired by the best shot on the Memphis police force named Frank Strasser, who still is alive, who had lunch with me. But he wouldn't eat. But nevertheless, on the basis of receiving $500, he came and sat down with me. And we made him a little uncomfortable, gave him some physical inflammation. But the only thing he would admit to was that his size shoes is 13 1/2, which was the actual size of the shoe that's in the Plaster of Paris cast. Going away from the shooting scene on the day of the shooting. But what he didn't know was that a 25-year friendship with another taxi driver who knew him for all that period of time caused him to reveal the truth. My informant jumped in the back of his cab after we had the lunch and said, I understand Pepper's going to have you indicted on the King case because all the evidence now is clear. And Strasser looked visibly agitated, turned around and said, what are they going to get me for something I did 30 years ago? And then paused and said, or knew about 30 years ago. So we pretty much nailed him down as the shooter.
That was William Pember in Oakland last year. Let me let him tell that. Maybe it's here.
Pember, our keynote speaker tonight. Thank you.
I meant to sample this last week.
That's fine.
But actually, I have a little birthday song that went along with that. And it's not that, you know, Bert. It's Twitlet.
Black Lives Matter movement, Miss Colors discusses her new memoir, When They Call You a Terrorist, Thursday, January 25th at 7:30 p.m. at First Congregational Church, 2501 Harrison Street,
Occupy Washington, D.C. It had to be stopped.
No, bombing villages in Vietnam had to stop.
Can we please not go there?
And that concludes this week's Twit Wit Radio featuring Lori Holt.
In my mind, it's the Arab-Syrian army, the most moderate people in this conflict here. When the Western media talks about American proxies and moderates, what does that mean to you?
To me, it's a farce. There are no moderate so-called rebels. They're all, and this is what Syrians would say if they had a voice in Western media, is that they're all committing the same crimes, the same heinous acts. The West refuses to put Nuruddin al-Zinki, terrorist group, on the terrorist list. They refuse to name them as terrorists when, in fact, they beheaded a 12 or 13-year-old Palestinian boy, and the West kind of wrote this off as a one-off, like, oops, this group accidentally did this. Well, they're still moderate.
Ahmad Hasham, which the West still has an award-winning war criminal. Yes, what a title. by none other than you, Finn Bishan.
And with a forward by you, Larry.
with I was honored to write the foreword. However, you know, I'm very, how can I put this? It is so amazing to see the demonstrative hypocrisy. I mean, they're serpents. I like the example that you just gave, you know. People, and I remember what they did to you, Cindy, the vomit stream, so-called mainstream media. Mm-hmm. I shall always remember how when the Obamatron drone man got in, who's really nothing more than a CIA asset, that's what he has been, but we won't even go into that. He murdered so many people, but when he carried on these wars, we went from something like 3 to 4 wars to 7 wars that by the time Obama was done. And, you know, we continue to be, of course, in Afghanistan, et cetera, all over the world. But my point is, where were these people who were protesting, who were out there saying, oh, this is terrible? I see them doing the same thing with Trump. I don't know. What do you think, Sister Cindy?
Well, you're my guest, but I would agree. I would agree with you as always. And Rhino and Dino, in case my listeners don't mean, that's Republican in name only, Democrat in name only. Mm-hmm. And really, mm-hmm. what they are is just all cheerleaders for the war machine, cheerleaders for capitalism. And everything that they do, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, of course, is to support those two, you know, deeply ingrained institutions or systems here in the United States. And they're just, you know, to me, they're just playing games. I mean, you mentioned Maxine Walters. She was somebody I worked with when Bush was president. She was very outspoken against all the crimes Bush committed. Apparently, was in a state of stupor when Obama was president, because I didn't hear anything from her. And now all of a sudden she's taking up the sword again against Trump. Who she took up the sword, like, to me. He hasn't even had a chance to commit near the amount of murder and mayhem that Obama committed in 8 years.
That's right. That's so correct, you know. And I'm going to, excuse me, I'm going to put a little plug in again for your wonderful book, the book The Obama Files, Chronicles of an Award-Winning War Criminal. Yes, what a title.
Well, hold it right there, Grace, because we have to step back when it comes to these banksters 10 points down the dial that, okay, on July 11, 2017 press release, blah, 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 Bill Crozier says the amount being charged is over four times the market rate in New York and threatens the future of independent radio. Market rate for FM transmitter tower lease in New York City is now about $12,000 monthly. WBAI's bill for the month of May 2017, in contrast, came to over $53,000. We've been on Empire State Building since 65 and have always been willing to pay what's fair and reasonable, but these extortionate annual increases are killing us. The ESRT must settle and release us from the rest of this onerous contract, unquote. Of course, they are part of the racketeer-influenced corrupt organization involved in the mind control defense stand down op that is happening. 9/11/63, when you wake up looking down the barrel of the gun, you of course lie, you appease the oppressor to survive, and you say friend to the friend of four question. Okay, that's a lie. Anybody pointing a gun at you, you know, is not your friend. Of course, the person holding the smoking gun saying, did anybody see anything? Of course, it's going to go off again, and then again, nobody will ever see anything.
Publicly said is a terrorist group. In fact, in 2014, the U.S. in their own internal documents, and this came out recently in a U.S. Document about funding the next stage of funding so-called rebels, the U.S. actually did list Ahrar al-Sham as terrorists. And, you know, one thing about ceasefires is that while the world is focused, rightfully so, on Aleppo, because Aleppo is really suffering, and unfortunately the corporate media doesn't focus on the 1.5 plus million people in Aleppo that are suffering from these so-called moderates that are firing Hellcannon-fired gas canisters of varying sizes, mortars, rockets, missiles, explosive bullets. This gets no play in the corporate media. And this, you know, when the West does talk about Aleppo, they're referring solely to the roughly 200,000 or 150,000 populated areas of eastern Aleppo. But ceasefires never apply to areas like Kafari and Fua, which have been under siege. If we want to talk about sieges, these villages in Idlib province have been under siege since March 2015. And the United Nations is very aware of this, but do nothing.
Go ahead. That's the point of the program, Stephen. Go ahead.
I think it's wrong to say there are no moderate groups. Now, I personally do not support U.S. arming anybody in Syria. It's just adding more fuel to the fire. And
this is the guy that kept Eva Bartlett from the forum in Santa Cruz. So let me get your ugly face off the screen, Stephen. Thank you. Okay, here we go.
You and I have argued this point many, many times. Yes, there were peaceful people, but there were also people committing violence. Go ahead. Jump in right in. Go ahead.
If I may, I'd like to add some testimony. You know, I've been to Syria five times since 2014. I've been to some of the key places like Aleppo twice, like Homs many times, and other areas of Syria. And wherever I've gone, the Syrian people have said, first of all, there's no moderates. Second of all these factions commit the same crimes, including the West darling Free Syrian Army, which doesn't exist. They're as heinous as Nusra, as Ahrar al-Sham and Daesh. The other point is that
it was never an
unarmed protest. It was never an unarmed protest. It was never
overwhelmingly
unarmed.
There may have been unarmed. Overwhelmingly
unarmed. There were also very. Let me finish my point, please. There were also very well armed protesters, including in the initial protests in Dara, and this is very well documented. But on my last trip to Syria, I interviewed a soldier who was then 24 years old, and he was sent with 300 other soldiers to Dara because the government knew there were going to be protests, and he was sent specifically. They were sent specifically without any weapons. They had only their batons, and for 3 weeks, they endured armed protesters firing on them. The first Friday, 29 people between policemen and army were killed. The second Friday, 52 were killed. And these were by what the West called unarmed protesters.
Hang on. Let me go back. Please let me go back to Garrick. He's only